That means it's Gaza Corner time, and I want to talk about, well, if I'm talking about Steve Bannon, I might as well talk about Donald Trump, and that's what we're going to do, Trump and Biden. No American president, from a historical precedent perspective, in dealing with Israel and Palestine, has done more to depart from historical precedent than Donald Trump. And tonight we will review Trump's most consequential policies and decisions regarding Israel and Palestine, and then compare it to how Biden has approached the moves that Trump made, as well as Biden's approach to Israel and Palestine. Up until Trump, the U.S. position on Jerusalem was that its status would be a crucial negotiating item under any peace agreement. So it was always to be determined. Trump blew that out of the water in 2018, as you know. He authorized the moving of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, essentially blessing Israel as the rightful owner of a unified Jerusalem. For a little historical perspective, Israel first captured East Jerusalem, that's the Palestinian side, since 1948, which the Palestinians would like to claim as their capital in an eventual state. And Israel first captured East Jerusalem in 1967 and then illegally annexed it in 1980. Palestinians obviously were outraged when Trump did this, and the UN General Assembly had an emergency meeting. It was an overwhelming vote to what they called this move by Trump, quote-unquote, null and void, the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Now, when Biden won the presidency, no one expected the Biden administration to reverse the relocating of the embassy to Jerusalem. But it is worth noting that the U.S. State Department, they put out this annual report. It's the report on human rights of various countries. And in the report, it includes East Jerusalem under its section on Israel. It doesn't even have a Palestine section. Only an Israel section, a West Bank section, and a Gaza section. But it adds this note, quote, language in this report is not meant to convey a position on any final status issues to be negotiated between the parties to the conflict, including the specific boundaries of Israeli sovereignty in Jerusalem or the borders between Israel and any future Palestinian state, unquote. So those are the words, but the actions of the Biden administration so far is to just treat Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Next up, let's talk in 2019. Trump closed the Jerusalem consulate for Palestinians located in East Jerusalem. This was significant. This consulate had been open for over 100 years before being shuttered by Trump. This is evidence of the United States rejecting the Palestinian claims to East Jerusalem. But in Biden's campaign platform for Arab American voters in 2020, he promised to reopen the U.S. consulate in East Jerusalem. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The United States will be moving forward with the process to reopen our consulate.
But so far, we're now in 2022, halfway through Biden's administration, no reopening has materialized, and maybe, just maybe, I know the reason. And that is because of this statement from Naftali Bennett, who had been the prime minister of Israel until very recently, and this is from the TRT World Network.
There's no room for another American consulate in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital of one state, and that's the state of Israel.
So that was Naftali Bennett saying to the U.S., don't reopen it. And the U.S. is saying, all right, well, okay, we won't, I guess, because it hasn't happened yet. So the next topic I want to move to is settlement expansion, also demolitions. And as a candidate, Biden pledged to oppose annexation and settlement expansion. The Palestinians view the growth of settlements as really the main obstacle to peace, because if you've been to Palestine, you know that it cuts off Palestinian communities from their land and from one another, essentially making a viable state impossible. And this is why many experts believe the two-state solution is not workable. On the other hand, pro-settler parties view the West Bank as the biblical and historical heartland of the Jewish people. So let's look at the numbers. In an AP story that's linked, there's a Gaza Corner section at the Tangents playlist, tangents.com. In the AP story, it relies on figures compiled by a settler organization called the West Bank Jewish Population Stats.com. The stats do not include East Jerusalem, which Israel annexed in a move that was never recognized internationally and which is now home to more than 200,000 Jewish settlers. The numbers reveal rapid settlement expansion experienced under Trump, who wholeheartedly supported settler growth in the West Bank, which was a break with previous U.S. administrations. The Biden administration has not used its leverage to stem the tide. And according to these statistics, settlement expansion has increased at a higher rate during the Biden administration than Trump. The Biden rhetoric is a return to the past. Settlement expansion is an obstacle to resolving the conflict, but the raw numbers, according to West Bank Jewish Population Stats.com, tell a different story. In 2020, the last year of the Trump administration, I mean, there were coronavirus lockdowns during that time in 2020. So maybe the numbers, maybe it's not quite apples to apples, but the settler population in the West Bank grew by 2.6% in 2020, the last year of the Trump administration. The settler population grew nearly 3.2%, has grown in the last 13 months, a higher percentage. The settler population is almost 500,000 right now. Israel's overall annual growth rate, by comparison, is about 1.7. So it's essentially almost double in settler expansion compared to the population expansion inside the Green Line. According to the CEO of the stat company, Baruch Gordon, he says there's a tremendous amount of construction going on, including in his community, the settlement Beit El, B-E-I-T-E-L. Beit El is located deep inside the occupied West Bank. It's an ultra-religious settlement that Trump's former bankruptcy lawyer turned ambassador to Israel. You remember David Friedman, I hope. He had been the president of the American fundraising arm of Beit El's yeshiva complex, and Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who was senior advisor on the Middle East for Trump, he still has a family charitable foundation, but before Trump was elected, that foundation had donated tens of thousands of dollars to this settlement prior, as I said, to a Trump's election. Demolitions, especially home demolitions, is one of the longstanding strategies Israel uses to displace Palestinians. There's an article at the Gaza Corner section dated February 25th of this year from The Intercept. The headline is, Israel surpasses 1,000 demolitions in the occupied West Bank since Joe Biden took office. Subtitled, quote, While the U.S. president refuses to condition military aid, Israel has toppled more than twice as many Palestinian structures in the West Bank than it had by this point in Trump's term. According to the article, experts blame the accelerating pace of Israel's demolitions under Biden as a direct result of Biden's unwillingness to pressure Israel over Palestinian rights. In a statement provided to The Intercept, the organization, If Not Now, said, and this was spokesperson Mariah Kaplan, quote, "It is time for Biden to do what five presidents from both parties have done, leverage U.S. aid and weapon sales to pressure the Israeli government," unquote. And she's referring to Presidents Eisenhower, Ford, Carter, Reagan, and Bush Sr. Aid to Israel, which is paid for by U.S. tax dollars, is also worth examining Trump versus Biden. Biden has actually increased the U.S. military assistance to Israel compared to both Obama when he was vice president and Trump. During the Obama administration, it was a $3.8 billion yearly 10-year arrangement with Israel. So a 10-year deal at $3.8 billion per year. And with Biden, another billion has been added on last year to, quote-unquote, replenish the Iron Dome, unquote. That's the missile defense system. And it needed replenishing after Israel's bombing assault on Gaza in May of last year. I'll add in a Washington Post column that Biden wrote, and or at least he's credited to have written. And the quote that's in the column is from Biden. It says that he took pride in passing, quote, "the largest support package for Israel in history," unquote. There is a clear difference between Trump and Biden in how they provided aid to Palestinians. In fact, Trump took away all the aid. He essentially ended all U.S. financial assistance to Palestinians, most notably cutting off funding for UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees. One of the early things Biden did in his career was resume the funding to UNRWA. UNRWA provides essential services, including health care, education. This is to about 5.7 million Palestinian refugees in the illegally occupied West Bank, as well as in Gaza. And since coming to office, the Biden administration says that it's restored about a half a billion dollars, $500 million in aid to Palestinians, and about $350 million of it goes to UNRWA. In terms of relations with the Palestinian leadership, Trump all but avoided the Palestinian Authority, known as the PA. There was also no contact by the Trump or Biden administrations with Hamas, which is the government that controls Gaza, because of the U.S. designating Hamas as a terrorist organization. Biden has been working to reestablish U.S. relations with the PA. He's been having discussions with Mahmoud Abbas. He met Abbas during his recent trip to the Middle East. But Abbas is deeply unpopular among Palestinians, and corruption runs rampant within the PA. And the PA is also viewed as an Israeli collaborator due to its security arrangement with Israel, which is why Hamas, although not necessarily popular, is much more popular and more admired because of its willingness to stand up to Israel as compared to the Palestinian Authority. During the summer of 2021, a poll by the Palestinian Center for Policy and Survey Research found that over half, 53% of Palestinians believe Hamas is, quote, most deserving of representing and leading the Palestinian people, unquote. While only 14% prefer Abbas's secular Fatah party. In terms of international organizations, Biden has re-engaged with various UN and international agencies that Trump had quit. Let's use one example, the Human Rights Council. The U.S. strategy in rejoining is not to advocate for Palestinian rights, but rather to protect Israel from within. And for example, just last month in June, the State Department had the following response to a Human Rights Council commission of inquiry that had issued a report accusing Israel of seeking permanent control over Palestinians with, quote, no intention of ending the occupation, unquote. Of course, the word occupation is never uttered by the Biden administration. It's just not allowed to even be said. That description by the Human Rights Council has been accurate for the last 55 years, since 1967. State Department spokesman Price said in a statement on June 7th that the Commission of Inquiry, quote, represents a one-sided, biased approach that does nothing to advance the prospects for peace, unquote. My question for Ned Price would be, what is the U.S. and Israel doing to advance the prospects for peace? I don't know. The Biden administration also revoked sanctions that Trump had imposed on the International Criminal Court, known as the ICC, imposed on officials who work at the ICC. However, the State Department has emphasized that the ICC is not a, quote-unquote, appropriate venue to investigate the killing of Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed by an Israeli sniper in the occupied West Bank in May. The U.S. did not conduct an independent investigation, yet it concluded, quote, gunfire from Israeli Defense Force positions was likely responsible for her death, and they found no reason to believe that this was intentional, but rather the result of tragic circumstances, unquote. Now, I did a Gaza Corner very recently, went in depth, and it's been proven, and many sources have said this, that it was intentional. And I won't go into that now, but the evidence appears overwhelming that it was intentional. Who ordered it or whether the sniper acted on his or her own, who knows? A U.S. official just 2 days ago on Thursday told the Times of Israel that the Biden administration will not open a new investigation into the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh. The lack of pressure or accountability from the United States, both under Trump and now under Biden, when Palestinians or Palestinian Americans are killed by Israeli forces or killed by settlers, this gives Israel a green light to act with complete impunity in its treatment of Palestinians. Another unprecedented step Trump did was become the only country, enable the United States to be the only country to recognize Israel's sovereignty over Syria's occupied Golan Heights, which was seized by Israel during the 1967 Six-Day War. The U.S. decision, which Biden does not appear willing to reverse, has more consequences than meets the eye. As Stephen Zunis, the professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, also he's the founding director and coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies, he stated earlier this year, but this was prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. This was in January. He said, quote, recognizing the takeover of one entire independent country by another is a virtually unprecedented action by a major power in modern times. The Biden administration, however, in refusing to rescind Trump's recognition, is taking the position that the expansion of territory by force, notwithstanding such prohibitions in the UN Charter, is not necessarily illegal after all, and can be an acceptable form of statecraft. As a result, the White House's opposition to Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea and more recent threats against Ukraine's territorial integrity is insincere. Again, this was January before the invasion. If the administration really believed that, quote, any use of force to change borders is strictly prohibited under international law, unquote, which has been a statement by Biden when describing Russia and Ukraine, Zunis goes on to say it would have annulled Trump's recognition. Indeed, the Biden administration's hypocrisy only serves to strengthen Russia's authoritarian leader, Vladimir Putin, who can correctly argue that United States opposition to his aggressive moves towards Ukraine is more political than principled, unquote. The final area I'll compare Trump and Biden is the subject of normalization. The Biden administration is in complete alignment with Trump on this. Biden is fully committed to normalization between Israel and Arab countries. This is known as the Abraham Accords. But let's look under the hood for a moment. Trump's final foreign policy move was having the United States become the only country in the world to recognize Morocco's annexation of the Western Sahara, which was a red line no previous U.S. president was willing to cross. This was the prize Morocco demanded in order to agree to normalize relations with Israel. Morocco has occupied much of the Western Sahara illegally since 1975 when it invaded it and illegally annexed it in defiance of the UN Security Council and also in defiance of the landmark ruling of the International Court of Justice. In an opinion piece by Peter Beinart called "The U.S. Supports Illegal Annexations by Israel and Morocco, Why the Hypocrisy?" he wrote, quote, "Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine gives the Biden administration a chance to reconsider this dangerous path. It can harness the current global revulsion against Putin's aggression to rebuild the principle that no country should redraw another borders by force. But only if it reverses Trump's decisions and proves that the U.S. is willing to live by the standards it demands of Moscow. International norms only remain strong if countries abide by them when they're inconvenient. And if the U.S. chooses continued hypocrisy, it will make Ukraine, Taiwan, and every other weaker nation bordered by a rapacious neighbor more vulnerable." The words of Peter Beinart. That article is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. And I'll let Professor Zunis have the last word. Quote, "The stakes are not simply about the future of one small country, but the question as to which principle will prevail in the 21st century, the right of self-determination or the right of conquest. The answer could determine the fate, not just of the Western Sahara, but that of the entire international legal order for many decades to come."